and welcome to another edition of the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. I have alongside with me my friend and co-host Parker Fleming, and special guest here to burn his one shot after a weird win every year. It's Mason Shireen. Mason, we'll start with you. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. It's kind of hard to pick like a quote unquote weird upset win after TCU is like 8-0, is perpetually ranked top 10 week after week. So, you know, I just picked, I picked winning in a place that we haven't won since 2014, which Parker always makes fun of me for like that being like my random favorite TCU win. So I figured this one, I'd be a good one to hop on and kind of just say hi, check out the vibes, see how everybody's doing.
The last game TCU won in Morgantown involved BJ Catalon getting a concussion. That's how long ago it was. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem real.
Yeah. I was I wasn't even writing for Frogs of War at that point. I don't think I'd even thought about writing about TCU football. And then, yeah, that season just pretty much changed my mind.
What a long time ago. TCU, Mason, I looked this up. That's why I was quiet there for a second, kind of awkwardly. TCU has been favored in every game except Oklahoma this year. TCU has not had an upset or an unexpected win this season. They have been the favorite every game except for Oklahoma. That is absurd.
Can I do this bit live on air? Because you and I, please, go back and forth with this bit every single week, or at least anyone that follows both you and I on Twitter will know this. But so, Parker, about like this time last year, TCU was what, like 3-5, had roughly the same talent on the roster. Things were looking bad, not looking good. But this year they are 8-0, roughly the same talent on the roster. Parker, what changed? Did something change? Am I missing something? Offensive line looks competent. Did something change? Are we setting our players up for success in the open field? What happened?
I think it's like a Patrick Ewing theory with Zach Evans leaving. That's the only thing I think that's different this year. It's you lose a good player and you're actually better as a result.
Okay. It all makes sense. All right. It's back into the left. It all clicks into place now.
Grant and I think at this point last year after the West Virginia game, Grant and I had one of our worst podcasts ever and legitimately like probably had a 20-minute conversation afterwards where we were like, dude, do we want to keep talking about TCU football? Yeah. Like, this isn't fun.
The Purple Theory podcast almost ended after the West Virginia game last year. And then yesterday, so I was like calling friends I hadn't spoken to in person in like 3 years to talk about the undefeated Horned Frogs. It's amazing how time flies.
Yeah. And then Matt Jennings is showing up like Gandalf at the end of Two Towers to lead the way.
Yeah. Yes, seriously. Oh my gosh. TCU is undefeated. So while we're here and while we have Mason, we should actually talk about the football game. 41-31 against West Virginia. Not the best defensive performance. I don't think we'll talk stats a little later. But TCU is running the air raid, man. They're running the power raid and they're going to score points on gosh dang everybody. I think the thing that stood out to me the most is that West Virginia scored a touchdown towards the end of the first half and TCU with like a minute and 20 seconds was like, oh, we're going to go score too. Not, hey, we're going to run it 3 times and go to halftime and figure things out. That alone made the vibes just so much better for me this game. TCU has like a relentless desire to score points, which has just not been something that Fort Worth has done, not something that has been done in Fort Worth in a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, putting the ball in the end zone pays off.
Turns out. Yeah. Can we talk about that throw Max made on that drive in the half? Was it like 3rd and 10 to Darius Davis? That's the best throw he's made all year. Easy. Absolute dart.
We got the backwards camera angle, like the end zone camera angle, and you could see like where the safety was, where Davis was. That ball was immaculate. Mason, what are your thoughts on Max Duggan's performance yesterday, just generally?
I mean, I don't know how explicit I can get on this podcast, but I was cussing up a storm in a good way.
Just don't say the F word because then I have to edit it out. And that's
enough. Okay. Can I say like, okay, well, I'll do my best. He big boyed West Virginia. I mean, he came in there and other than one drive, he looked great. He looked maybe the sharpest he's ever been. But again, he's being set up for success. His receivers are getting open. Things are looking easier. It doesn't seem like it's him trying to move a mountain every time we need 10 yards. So, I mean, I don't even want to say it out loud because I don't want to get like hopes up, but I'm going to say it anyways. I think the Heisman thing is real. I think that he is playing the best ball of, you know, I don't think it's a hot take to say of any Big 12 quarterback. I think the only real quarterbacks that like I consider that are playing at a higher level than him or just playing as good, if not better than him, are going to be Hooker over in Tennessee. And then, I mean, I know CJ Stroud didn't have a great game against Penn State, but like you can't deny what he's done. Even if it hasn't been against the best team. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say he's playing like a top three, at worst, top five quarterback in the country right now.
Yeah. And in our NFL, like broken brain world where all anyone wants to talk about is like draft picks and NFL, whatever. I think it's really important to look at college quarterbacks and be like, who's a good college quarterback that's being asked to do a lot? Like, it's not like Max Duggan is, you know, Dorian Thompson Robinson with an 8 out of 5 or Stetson Bennett against Oregon with an average depth of target of like 3 yards or something, where it's like, hey, talented player, just go. He's still being asked to make throws, to create plays, and is a really fun and really good college quarterback.
He's got that dog in him. Some of the throws he made, I mean, just the recognition at the end of the game there to notice that West Virginia jumped offside and throw that ball to Stephon Williams in the corner. Great throw. B, like, good on him for having the balls to do it. Like, that is not something Duggan would have done in the past, but he A, made a great play to recognize, and B, made a great throw.
Steve, Max Duggan definitely had TCU -7.5.
Yeah, also that.
My wife and I have a joke when we like, she knows which games I pick for the BetUS show. And so she's like, all right, which one, what are we rooting for here or whatever? And so one of us will say, I'm never going to die when we get a break like that. And that was a definite, I'm never going to die moment. Mason, who else on the offense do we need to recognize just in terms of the whole season, in terms of TCU, in terms of West Virginia specifically?
I mean, we've all talked about Quentin Johnson enough. He is a man. He gets his every game. Darius, you know, shows up at least every other game. He's got big plays. But I mean, it feels like is this Tay's sixth year at TCU? Is this his fifth or sixth year at TCU? I think it's his fifth.
It feels like his ninth.
Yeah. But he had that great, was it a 71 yarder? You know, he's good for one of those whenever like he just gets the chance. So it's just kind of good to see.
Like, he feels like Max is like, stuff is hitting the fan. I got to find my guy. That's what it feels like. Mm-hmm. Max goes to Tay when he's like, okay, we just got to get something. And that's pretty great. That was Darius that dropped a catchable ball that would have been a first down. Not Tay. So yeah, Tay was pretty solid. Yeah.
Yeah. And he reminds me a lot of, oh God, was it David Porter in the 2014? Again, like the 2014 season is like my linchpin of college football, like just fandom. So I always refer everything back to that. But like, he's just going to get you what you need. And then he'll like pop off for one big play every once in a while. But I mean, it's good to see him kind of succeed. We only gave up, what was it, 2 sacks on the day? Guys,
I believe that's right. Yeah.
I cannot emphasize this enough. This is so much, like, we could be 4-4 at this point. But if our offensive line was playing the same way like it is now, I would be so happy regardless, because I was so sick and tired, I'm sure as everybody was, of seeing Max get the living, you know what, kicked out of him week after week after week. And then there was that Kansas State game 2 years ago where he just got like obliterated and nobody came to help him pick him up. And I think it was the first game of the season where Parker and I both tweeted at the same TCU lineman like destroying some Colorado linebackers, hating ass linemen, because we were just so excited. And again, like, I don't want to say the name out loud, but anybody who knows, again, me knows, I'm so glad that insert previous offensive line coach is not here anymore. And I think like the whole offensive line, except for maybe a certain tackle, should get regular praise. They're doing a great job. I've been impressed with them week after week. And so, yeah, I think just the entire offensive lineman deserves some applause there as well.
You're talking about Player X.
Player X.
I saw that tweet.
And you have to imagine that the foundation is there for better offensive line talent as well, not just, yeah. I mean, development. These guys are talent. Like Andrew Coker was a 4-star, I think, but he played in a feckless and undirectioned program and didn't develop for 5 years or whatever. And so I think that the development is the thing that's most exciting about me. Also, they addressed a specific need. Like, how many years has TCU needed an extra interior offensive lineman and just played revolving door at tackle instead? And the fact that they were able to say like, hey, we're going to go get an interior offensive lineman, Alan Ali, who's going to, ease up pressure, let us use our best linemen in a more fun way. I think I'm just very excited about the general eternity begins anew with the TCU offensive line. And that's just very nice.
Yeah.
We can burn an advanced stat if you want, Parker, real quick. Just reading the pass blocking grades on PFF of the TCU offensive lineman from Saturday. Lee was at 83.6, Wes Harris 82.9, Steve had an 80.4, Brandon Coleman was a 70.1, and Player X was a 62.2. That's really good for four of the five. That's much better than we've been accustomed to with the TCU offensive line in the past.
Yeah, Max was only pressured on 7 total dropbacks, so that's 24.1. And his pressure to sack ratio was 14.3, so he was able to extend plays, even if he took 2 really bad sacks, I think were mostly his fault, but the pressures were way lower. And so that's pretty awesome that he is able to improve a little bit there, but also he's not like, one, and TCU is not having to keep 6 or 7 guys in to protect against 4. Like TCU is winning 5-on-4, 5-on-3, which they were not doing last year at all.
Can I pivot for a minute to logic and playing?
Please.
I don't want to do this, but Mason, I want your take on this as well, since you're here. What the hell was TCU doing on that goal line drive that ended with a field goal? I want to make sure I get the plays here. So beginning of the fourth quarter, TCU was first and goal at the West Virginia run. West Virginia 1, excuse me. Amari DiMercato, run for a loss of 2. Quentin Johnston, run for a loss, or excuse me, run for a gain of 2. Quentin Johnston, run for a loss of 11, 30-yard field goal. What the hell?
Yeah, I think my dad actually summed this up best. He sent me a text right after that that stalling end of a drive, and he said, is Cumbie out here calling plays again?
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty much what we all felt like, considering Kendra didn't get the ball. I think Garrett has a little Kellen Moore in him, and he likes to get a little too fancy and showy when he doesn't need to. Especially when the Kendre Miller up the middle works more often than it doesn't. They know more about football than I can ever forget about football. So I'm not going to be, getting the whips out just yet, but yeah, that was unfortunate because that would have pushed it to a 17-point game or mm-hmm. been like a 3 possession game. And then, we're 8-0, and I'll save my kind of thoughts on the season for a little bit later whenever we get to more time. But yeah, to answer your question, I respectfully have no idea what the hell that was.
Well, and it's interesting that they were saying something about Kendre Miller on like ball security, and it looks like so that really frustrating drive where it was 3 plays and then Jared Wiley fell down and Max threw an interception, basically a punt at the end of it. Yep. That play or that sequence, everyone was like, why aren't they running Kendre? Why aren't they running Kendre? And that feels like the one where somebody went over and said, hey man, I know your hand hurts. We need you here. Like we have to have you in the game on this next drive. And then they brought him back and he ran, 8-yard run, 3-yard run, 2-yard run, 4-yard run, and then TC scores. So I think I'm giving him kind of a gut check award just for clearly dealing with something and then saying, oh no, I have to be able to go. Otherwise we're going to be in a bad spot here. What else? I'm looking at time defense. Okay. Mason defense. And then we'll go, vibes or monologue or rant or closing thoughts, whatever you got. So let's do defense for a little bit.
Yeah. Man, the missed tackles are just like, are going to result in like 17 more gray hairs on my head. But, again, like you guys like to say, I think you bring up a good point. Like this Gillespie is doing this without his guys for his system. And, I think, I'd rather have good second half adjustments than no good second half adjustments. But this is starting to feel a lot like 2015, where we're kind of, again, like I'm just referring to old TCU seasons because whatever, you can even use 2014 Florida State if you want, where offensive star power is there, they're going to get theirs, but these games are going to be real uncomfortable if that defense can't just like get it together. And while they are not a perfect unit, they have just, again, found ways to improve over 4 quarters. And I think that is a good sign that you need to play 4 solid quarters in order to beat this defense, not just 2. But still, there's still work to be done. Linebacker depth, as you guys have said, is concerning. They give up 1 or 2, like just highlight reel mossed catches a game, apparently. which, like, you know, so be it. I think they gave up two in this one. One was the one in like third and 10, and then to the one guy that was, I think, covered by Stewart, and then that touchdown, their last touchdown of the game, when he was hit by the two defenders but still brought it down. So yeah, again, like the defensive line shows up most times. I felt like the front seven I've been less concerned with. Linebackers and pass protection is a different subject, but I mean, again, like overall, like this is better than last year. I mean, again, I know that's like not saying much, but we're not giving up 200 rushing yards a game. Parker, I don't know what you challenged them to. Was it give up only 100 yards rushing like in six of the games at the beginning of the season or whatever? Yeah. So I mean,
I think I said give fewer than 200 yards half the time. Like that would be, I would be happy with that. And I think they're on pace for that. Yeah. There's a couple things that stood out to me this week that I want both of your opinion on. Did Sam James get in Bud Clark's head? I think Bud Clark was
right. I think so. Well, first off, as a homeowner on Bud Clark Island, I have to acknowledge property values continue to go up. Picked off on the last play of the game. Hell yeah. But Bud Clark was targeted five times, gave up four catches for an average of 18.8 yards per catch. That's not good. He's a very boomer bust safety, which is not what you want out of a safety.
Well, it's because everyone's boomer bust. Average guy.
Looking at the defensive stats for this game are hilarious. First off, Mason, welcome to your first ever Shad Banks snap count. 9 snaps for Shad Banks this week. But no one really played well in pass coverage. Johnny Hodges, Jamoy Hodge got put in some interesting situations. Trey got bodied a couple times. It was a very ugly game.
Yeah, I mean, no, go ahead, Parker.
I was just going to say, and like specifically, I think Graham Harrell had a good game. Yeah. They kept running that same PA boot. We were like, oh, we'd really love to have Jamoy Hodge make a decision and then us get to do, which also like, dude, it's JT Daniels. He's not going to run it. He's going to throw it, settle back. And took TC a little bit to get over that. I think West Virginia ran it once in the first drive out of the half. And you're like, oh, guys, come on. And then they really got a hold on it after that. But that was kind of annoying. And then that Bryce Ford Wheaton, that big play, one, he was so open on the orbit motion wheel that I think that was Foster. I don't know. It doesn't matter. I need to, you know, blast somebody. And Daniels just missed him. Daniels was afraid of throwing it too big and just completely missed him. And that would have been a clear touchdown. And then they did that. They ran the separation and they miscommunicated on the route, but they saw he was open against Keon Stewart and they ran it again immediately the next play. And Bryce Ford Wheaton makes an amazing catch. You get a big explosive play. I thought Graham Harrell did a pretty good job this week.
Can I say this? I like Joe Gillespie as a defensive coordinator, but it's gotten to the point where 4 weeks in a row, I've said, wow, the opposing offensive coordinator had a really good game. That's a bit concerning.
Well, it wasn't the first. I feel like they've had a good first half. This is the first one where I've been like, oh, the whole game, I feel like Graham Harrell did pretty well.
Kansas, I thought both halves, well, especially the second half, good. But that's fair. Gillespie does adjust, and he's adjusted well. It just seems like every game TCU is encountering scheme problems, and then they have to kind of fix them at the half.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't have the answers, but it's frustrating.
I don't know. Okay, so Mason, we'll do some nerdy stat stuff here in a little bit. But before you get out of here, give us your thoughts on the game. Give us your thoughts on the season. Give us your State of the Union address, and we'll let it roll.
Sure. First of all, I do want to bring up from a couple weeks ago, your statement of the last state you'd want to live in was New York. Like, Parker, no. Like, I was walking my dog in a very nice neighborhood in Fort Worth, and I audibly yelled, Parker, what the, you know, insert.
Did Mason just say, I've got a lot of problems with you people, and you're about to hear it? Did you just go Costanza? Did you go Festivus or whatever?
Like, thanks for having me on, but come on, Parker. Like, what was that? Like, I know you don't believe that.
Upstate is great. I like the Hudson School of Painters, but I'm not interested in living anywhere near
New York City. I like
the Hudson
School of Painters. Kiss my ass.
Whoa, the Amon Carter Museum in Fort Worth has all of this amazing American and Western art. There's a lot of Hudson School guys. There's a lot of New York artists that are in there. I'm trying to say a redeeming thing about New York and agree with our guests, but fine, Grant. We'll just throw him under the bus and...
Mob Deep is from New York. Just shout out Mob Deep. Anyway, sorry, Mason.
Continue. No, you're good. I just needed to open up with that. Just kind of state of the union. For the game, you know, a win is a win. We haven't won in Morgantown since 2014. And that game with, I think, TCU had a better team than they do now. This was still a close game. So I'll take what I can get. But, you know, anybody that's really followed this team for the past couple of years knows that like this is just a natural improvement. This team looks way better. I mean, the records at some, in the words of Bill Parcells, you know, at some point you are what your record says you are. And this team is 8-0. And so I don't ever want people to think that I get upset with winning. And that's not it. That's not the case at all. And my expectations every year for TCU are 8-4. I think anyone who knows me thinks that's relatively okay. Anything above that, you exceed my expectations. Anything below that, has fallen short of my expectations and then should be of slight concern. This team has already won 8 games and they have to go 0-4 down the stretch in order to just be 8-4. And which would, again, now that we're at this point, I think the expectations kind of have to change and the context of the season needs to take it into account. 8-4 to finish the season would be a disappointing season. I think even 9-3 would be disappointing. 10-2, I think we take that, live with that, go to a New Year's Six Bowl, accept it, whatever. But I just think that the way that this team is kind of playing with house money right now, the offense is hot. I think the defense needs to figure stuff out. And my confidence will be either shaken a lot or, you know, I'll feel a lot better depending on how we play against Texas Tech at home next week. But again, like in terms of just state of the union, man, I'm having so much fun. I don't know about you guys. I mean, like, I know, right? 8-0, so much fun. But this time last year, whenever TCU upset Baylor, I came on this podcast after, you know, X amount of margaritas and said that the programs of Baylor and TCU should be switched right now. It should be TCU, the team that is undefeated or has one loss, competing for a conference title, going in and potentially being upset in late November. And where are we right now? And we're looking at that game in 2 weeks. So, look, I mean, Dykes has done a great job in this first year. You're winning. You've brought the most out of your talent. I would say you're exceeding, I think, just about everybody's expectations other than maybe Donati's, because he's the one who made the hire. You know, I mean, Parker and Grant, I do want to hear from you guys, because I don't know if you fully dived into the talk about the P word. Do I think this team can beat an Alabama team? No. Do I think this team can go toe-to-toe with Tennessee on TCU's best day? Probably. Yeah, I think they could.
It's not like anybody else is beating Alabama and Georgia in the playoff. Like, there's no shame in that. And what we're going to get done is, if TCU makes a playoff, they're going to get blown out in the first round. That's just going to happen. That's fine. Yeah. And we're going to get gaslit about how they didn't belong because they're from the Big 12 and they're small and purple and weird. And that is the stupidest thing in the world to me. I'm preemptively mad about the disrespect. Yeah. I've engineered a hypothetical scenario to raise my blood pressure.
Oklahoma did it like 4 years in a row, just got roasted in embarrassing fashion. I mean, Cincinnati did it last year. They deserve to be there, and we knew they were going to get blown out. It didn't happen. TCU deserves to get blown out, dadgummit. No, Mason, we are fully in P-word discussion at this point.
Okay.
We have no option.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the game that we've all got circled, you know, at least we've had circled over the past since at least the Oklahoma State game is the game down in Austin that we've thought where things might get a little rocky, and that's where, you know, the metal will really be tested. But, you know, I don't want to go like full in and like get my hopes up just to get, you know, smashed into the floor later. But again, like anything after this has been gravy, man. Like this whole season has exceeded my expectations. So state of the union, like we're good. We're already throwing the parade, man. Like, even if we go 8-4, which, knock on wood, I hope we don't. But I mean, this season has already been so much fun just through the slog we've had to go through for the past 4 years. And guys, like, Gary is the greatest coach in TCU history. I don't think anybody can argue that. There is a literal statue for him. I don't think that's the statue is the reason why he acted the way he did the past couple of years. But when seeing someone adapt and not be stagnant and be open to admitting, hey, I can do things better, I can improve on things, is just so refreshing. And just the whole media tour for TCU, just with the, I mean, I'm going to say the actual phrase, but like the literal shit posting videos they post after wins, the
incredible,
Mac, if you guys haven't watched it yet, I mean, the listeners and you two, if you haven't watched Joel Klatt's interview with Max Duggan on his show, it was great. It's just kind of getting to hear more from the quarterback and one of the leaders of the team. Just making players open and available is just so refreshing. And I think this new regime has done a great job of that. And I cannot praise them highly enough. And just the last thing I want to say is that it is so much fun. And I'm not breaking news here. It is so much fun having a relevant program in November. It is so much fun. While I hate being thrown into the ESPN graphic of the first two left out of the playoffs, like every other week, like it's just so much fun seeing national journalists get to talk about TCU. These fun stories from like The Athletic, from ESPN, ESPN Plus getting written about this, not just these players, but the school. And again, considering what this team has gone through the past 3-4 years has made it so much easier to root for them, has gotten me so much more excited to see them succeed, because the standard that was set the past 3 years was not 8-0 relevant in November. It was like 3-5, struggling to score 20 points a game. As Parker used to say, that's a lot of points, Grant. Like, mm-hmm. I think we all committed to that bit so much that we all got a little traumatized from that, but for good reason. So yeah, again, like I think for anybody listening to this, this season has exceeded everyone's expectations. I'm feeling great. I'm excited to see what's next. Truthfully, like the one I'm rooting for the most though is I can't, if Max makes it to be a Heisman finalist, guys, like I will probably cry. Like I will probably shed a tear.
Oh, I will. Yeah. Without a doubt.
Yeah. Not even.
Would be truly incredible after the season. And I like that you said the 8-4 thing, because that's what I said preseason would be an excellent season. And so, yeah, if TCU loses 4 here at the end, we're going to be pretty annoyed about that. But 8-4 here with a new roster, I mean, with a new staff coming in, is like proof of concept that Sonny Dykes, when he has a roster, can field a competitive team and kind of building the forward. So anything on top of 8-4 is Lanyap. Absolutely.
Mason, I just want to make sure we get your verdict. Is TCU actually good?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a really good on the border of great team.
Okay, that's fine. That's been the ongoing discussion for like the last 3 weeks. We're trying to figure it out.
So yeah. I think that you play Kansas when they're peaking and you go in there and you like literally their biggest game of the decade and you control the game pretty much the entire time. You win, you come back from being down by 17 points and, you know, take Gundy's mullet and shove it in his underpants. Then you just, you know, come back from being down to a very well coached team in Kansas State. And then you go on the road and win in a place you haven't won in 8 years. So I think this stretch was tough. I know like people like to say the toughest stretch is over. I think that the toughest stretch will end when we play Iowa State at home.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a lot more in front of TCU, but they've accomplished a whole lot. So it is fun. I think it's important to remember. We can analyze, we can project, we can say, hey, TCU right now is filling that role in the Big 12. Every year there's a team where it's like, somebody's got to win games and you're just coming up on the right side. That's fun for TCU to be that, because they haven't been that in a really long time. So certainly very fun. Awesome. Mason, thank you. As always, thank you for hopping on. When we'll do some kind of live reaction show if TCU is in the talk for New Year's Six playoff, whatever, and have some fun with that. You'd be a good guest for that. So help me remember to do that. People can find you on Twitter. I don't remember what the underscore is. What's your username?
At Mason _ BCHREENE, my last name. You can find me on Twitter. Typically my active days are on Saturday mornings and then Saturday for TCU games, sometimes during a TCU game. And if TCU wins the Big 12 this year, I will go to Dutch's, Grant's favorite place in Fort Worth, and I will order 5 lineman burgers in honor of our starting 5 offensive linemen. I will try to eat every single one of them.
Ooh, Okay.
You should supplement with some soluble fiber a couple weeks in advance. Just build up that regularity. Look, you're going to need
I've watched Man vs. Food. I've watched every episode of Man vs. Food. I know what I'm talking about. I can do this.
It's mentality. Mine never matter, man. Mine never matter. You can do it. Yeah. Mason, thanks so much for hopping on, man. This was a lot of fun. Always glad to check in. Glad we didn't lose to West Virginia again. And hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, you all. Take care. Grant, I appreciate your morning, your tweet of what band should I listen to while watching TCU game on mute. If you guys haven't yet, for all your listeners, go listen to Churches. They're great. You guys, again, thank you all so much for having me on. Keep up the good work. And yeah, hey, go listen to Turnpike Troubadours because they are back. All right. Peace out, everybody.
They are back. Thanks, Mason. It is my thought, Grant, we're going to leave this in and just go. We're just going to keep rolling right here
with
this on Zoom. I'm too lazy to switch over to Audacity. And guess what? The audio is not going to sound any better if we do that. that's Mason Wild Man Train.
Mason was very clearly just recording on the audio on his laptop, but I guarantee you is going to sound better than I do. And I have a microphone. I don't understand.
I think some rival podcast pranked you and set up a fake ad for you to buy a microphone or something. I don't get it. Anyway, we'll see what happens with that. Grant, I have an important question before we get started with the TCU West Virginia recap. I'm putting 30 minutes on the clock and I'm kind of keeping this as part of it because we've talked about some things. Is that a Peloton behind you?
Yeah.
I didn't know you were a Pelotoner. Is that new?
I'm not a very good one, but yes, I do own it. Parker, I've been recording in this room for a year and a half. This has always been behind me.
I've never seen that before in my entire life.
That's not true. Yes, it is a Peloton. I'm not going to tell you my Peloton. I don't do it as frequently as I should, but I am a Peloton owner. Not to brag.
Interesting. There is a, I'll tell you something off air. Remember, that's a very good self-filter.
Cannot tell you how unexpected that question was.
I just will tell you, when I tell you this off air, you will be like, oh, that was an amazing self-filter because okay. I almost said something real dumb that I was going to cut out. TCU beats West Virginia 41-31. Grant, they averaged a 0.46 EPA per play. They held West Virginia to a 0.10 EPA per play. 8.82 yards per play for TCU, 11.8 yards per drop back. Just an absolutely absurd passing performance and 0.22 EPA per rush. Again, an astounding offensive performance, 25.05 total EPA, expected points added for TCU. Absolutely astounding performance from the offense again.
Yeah, I mean, there's no better way to sum it up than this is the yardage of all of TCU's touchdowns. 71 yards, 55 yards, 51 yards, 29 yards, 30 yards. They didn't score a touchdown inside the red zone and put up 41 points.
Which is problematic in some ways, but that's fine. They still scored 41. Yes, it's not like last year. It's not like last year where we were like, oh my gosh, if this defense would just breathe, the offense is doing enough for TCU to at least be competitive. It's like, no, the offense is just slapping people around, doing whatever they want. And
Yeah. I mean, the Tay Barber touchdown, he was wide open. The Quentin Johnston touchdown, he was wide open. Imani Bailey scoring a 30-yard run at the end of the half. I was in the middle of tweeting, what on earth is that play call? Then he broke free. That's the Imani Bailey we'd hoped to see this entire year.
Imani Bailey saw something that I did not see. I heard all spring and all fall how his like vertical to horizontal or horizontal to vertical transition, like getting up the field, was out of this world. And we saw it on that play because it didn't look impressive when you first watched it. And you were like, oh, interesting. And then you go back and watch and see like his body just went a different way. I don't know. My knees would be out of their sockets. Like
100%. That
was extremely impressive. You mentioned Tay Barber. We've had the game, right? Last week was a Jared Wiley game. We've had the Quentin Johnston game the 2 weeks before. The Tay Barber game this week. Tay Barber's yards per route run this season, 0.75, 3.67, that's Tarleton, doesn't matter, 1.86, 4.12, 1.25, 0.94, 2.08, 5.50 yards per route run. Extremely productive for him, 4 targets, 4 catches, 24.8 yards per reception with the touchdown. average depth of target was 12.3, was getting down the field, was getting open, calling it the Tay Barber game, and I'm okay with that.
Can I read like just some stats that make that kind of make my heart pound and make me happy?
Absolutely.
This is the average yards per reception for every TCU wide receiver. Only four of them caught passes. Five is the kind of Marty Mercado. Tay Barber, 24.8 yards per reception. Savion Williams, 32.3. Quentin Johnston, 19.0. Darius Davis, 20.0. Parker, they opened up a can of whoop ass in the passing game. Yep, West Virginia had nothing for it.
That is 14 of your 16 receptions, which TCU was only 16 for 23, which seems absurd to me in terms of, but if you scored a 60-yard touchdown, you just don't have to throw passes.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. 21.3 yards per completed pass.
I felt like Kevin Malone there. Like, why throw short pass when long pass do trick? With long pass do trick. On the other side, good Lord, this can't be real. Kendre Miller, 12 attempts, 10 yards per attempt. Grant, yeah. The man had 120 total yards. 50 of those came after contact. 4.17 yards of contact after yards after contact on each run. 5 missed tackles forced. And Grant, again, I love the balance here. I love the balance. 6 zone runs, 6 gap runs. They are not predictable. I'm worried with the multiple running backs and the substitutions, which is something that annoys me right now, that they were going to be predictable, and they really are not. They're really, really balanced there.
And that unpredictability is the same with Amari DiMercato. 3 zone runs, 3 gap runs. They're scheme agnostic running the ball, and it's super frustrating for defenses, and it's super beneficial for the offense. It's awesome. Scheme agnostic with the exception of handing Quentin Johnston the ball and asking him to do things in bad scenarios. But again, that's my only quibble with the offense this game. So that's fine. We can leave it.
Yeah. Like I said earlier, again, just moving through the offense stats and we'll talk about stuff. 22 of 29 dropbacks were kept clean on the 7 pressure dropbacks, still a 50% completion for Max Duggan. His overall completion was a little bit lower than you'd think. It was 59.1. But he had 2 drops. And so when you include those 2 drops, he's 75% adjusted completion on an 11.5 average depth of target. 2 big time throws, no turnover worthy plays. No turnover worthy plays. They're calling that interception to Wiley. They're blaming that on Wiley. So I don't know if that's 100% true. I'm processing that in real time. I don't know that I believe that. I think that was underthrown.
It was.
Should be a turnover worthy play. But I mean, just incredible. 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, 5 of 7 on balls 20 plus yards downfield. Grant, 5 of 7 on balls 20 plus yards downfield.
Parker, what was the knock or what was the myth about Max Duggan passing the ball last year?
That he can't hit the guy downfield.
Right, especially over the middle. Right.
Yep.
On passes 20 yards down the field between the hashes, he was 3 of 3 for 156 yards and 1 touchdown.
Let's just see what he is on the season. Let's compare this season to last season. Myths and reality here. All right, TCU, 10 for 14, 436 yards between the numbers, and 10 plus yards, 22 for 36. Grant, he has 123.5 NFL passer rating between the numbers, 20 plus yards downfield. Last season, he had 27 attempts, only 11 completions, 20 plus yards down the field.
So either Max all of a sudden found some crystal in his dorm room or wherever he lives in TCU and suddenly got better, or they're just scheming guys open and Max can make those throws. I wonder, it's a shame PFF does not have how many of those throws were the pro Wells play over the middle of the field, so we could break that down as well. But it's amazing how much of a leap Max has made.
Absolutely, and I'll say something kind of along the lines of TCU scoring again before the half. I really think that was just a representative dispositional change for this offense. I'll make fun of our friend Colin Post a little bit, who texted in and he made some kind of joke about, oh, Max, like, Max would have missed that throw 3 times last year. And yeah, I forget which exact play it was. And my immediate response was, wrong. Max would have missed it once and they never would have thrown it again. And I love that they're like, hey, you're our quarterback. We're going to try and get you to get this right. I think about that, gosh dang, wheel route over the middle, kind of the seam thing to Zach Evans, where it's like play action, whatever. And in the West Virginia game, he slightly overthrew it. In the, I don't even remember what other game it is now.
But he slightly underthrew it.
And they never ran it again. They ran it twice. That was it. And you're like, dude, oh, come on. Just like that play is going to be open every time. Let him try it. But yeah, I love how they set this up for success. And yeah, I mean, Max is really good. And Max is continuing to be good. And do I think Max Duggan is like a first round NFL draft pick? No. Do I think Max Duggan is a very good college quarterback who deserves to be on the Heisman podium if he continues this up over the next four games? Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Does he have my heart? Yes. Yes, he does.
Can he melt me with a smile? Yeah.
At some point, like, we're going to get investigated, I think, for
that was maybe too much yes hand. I probably should have drawn the line.
That was on me. I alluded to it with Mason earlier. I thought the offensive line had a pretty decent game. Max did a good job of stepping up in the pocket and rolling out and avoiding some sacks. He had like a good throwaway, which is a weird compliment, but it's something we haven't seen him do. He's been holding on to the ball way too long this season. So that was nice of him to just kind of chunk and run when he needed to. But if you look at like the top four offensive linemen, Ali, Harris, Avila, Coleman, they all performed fairly well against a West Virginia front that isn't that great, but they still have a Stills brother, and that's always terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. And he causes some disruption in the middle. I mean, for sure. But he didn't get a pressure. Most of his stuff was in the run game and kind of blowing stuff up. He didn't get credited with a pressure. So I think they did a great job. I think that the only time that I was mad with one of the core four that I care about was like the very first drive. Max took the 12. It's the reason TCU kicked a field goal on the first drive instead of scored a touchdown, because Max didn't step up in the pocket, but Steve was supposed to pull, and Steve did not do a good job there. And just got brushed a little bit and was too slow and couldn't get an angle. And then Max got sacked. But Grant, on the broadcast, I'm not even doing this. This isn't me doing this, so I'm fine saying it. On the broadcast, on two separate plays, the announcer said, Coker, the right tackle, is leaning, and West Virginia knew what play was coming. And I went back and looked, and by God, when they're running GT and he has to get over, he's leaning. Or at least was yesterday. That's not something I noticed. That's something I want to go back and look at. But I mean, it was. Even the stuff that you know, PFF's not going to grade him out on, even the stuff like that is just, it's been really, really rough. And that's really hard, but they have four good guys. And so that's a little bit easier to deal with.
Well, it's understandable because player X, I mean, this is his first year with the team. I mean, this is his first year starting, right?
It was Madden create a player. Just, you know, you had to fill it in with a spot there. And he's been negatively programmed his entire career, right? It's not his fault. It's society's fault.
That's it takes a village to raise a right tackle. And do you want to talk about defense?
Hello and welcome to the Purple Theory podcast, funded by the DNC and the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, I just self-censored like eight jokes. Do you want to talk about
the defense? Yeah, we kind of get out of that. yes, on Thursday night, we did the All Vibes Spaces with Melissa. And yeah. Grant, you should hop in. There's a ton of people that hop in there. So one Thursday night when you're not in your meditation chamber, we'll have to get you on there. But specifically, I talked about, and I talked with Jeff Mitchell about, we need the Dylan Horton game. We needed it. TCU has not had the Dylan Horton game. And the man showed up. Five pressures, two sacks. Wish he would have finished a couple of those sacks, but five pressures on 37 pass rush. Like, the dude was coming for it. I love that.
He had an absolutely, he had a very great game. Like you said, he didn't finish a lot of those. That was kind of an endemic thing among the TCU defense. PFF grades him out as 18 missed tackles across the game, which is not outstanding. Horton had one of those, but I think he probably should have been credited for a few more. But yes, this was the best game Dylan Horton's played all year. I was legitimately... He made a couple plays and I was like, wait a minute, surely that's not Dylan Horton. Do I remember his number wrong? And then, it was Dylan Horton. So there you go.
I want to talk about this, and then remind me to come back to the JT Daniels fumble thing. We'll talk about that too. I don't think that they're grading him as a missed tackle when he like runs after and runs down a guy and doesn't make the tackle. Like, I think that has to be like when he's not in position to make the tackle, but he like runs across the field and tries to get it. They're not like penalizing him for that. That has to be why. Cause it feel like, I mean, he runs hard and runs after the ball, but it feels like he wasn't coming for it. So I don't know about the missed
tackles. No, I think a couple of those sacks, it was like, dude, you had him, and you just kind of let him escape.
The best one, so Johnny Hodges had 3 missed tackles, and I only bring this up because one of them was an absolute Leroy Jenkins moment where he came unabated to the quarterback, full head of steam, and I think he expected resistance. It was kind of the thing where, like, you get your friend in middle school, you'd like, hey, put your hands, we'll pressure whatever, you let go, and they fall. I think Johnny Hodges, like, expected some sort of resistance and just got over his skis and fell, but, I mean, it was absolutely Leroy Jenkins, just fire hydrant, blaze of glory in the backfield, and he came nowhere close to sacking JT Daniels.
Okay, do you want to talk about that fumble real quick? Because it was a wild call. Upon replay, I think it was an empty-handed play. And I think the ball got stripped and he hit it forward. I don't think he had it in his hand.
I think the only reason they called it a fumble is because he freaked out and then ran after it. I think he stood there and snapped his fingers and walked off and been like, no, obviously not. That they wouldn't have called it. But yeah, it did look, I mean, again, bang, bang play. And I would have been fine if they'd have said, no, it's a pat. Like, I get that. I really think the only reason they called it on the field as it was, because it was the call stands. So they didn't confirm it and they wouldn't have overturned it the other way. I think it's because he did it.
I believe the NCAA changed a rule where they don't announce confirmed. They only say stands or overturned.
But they do that for some things. I guess they do targeting has to be confirmed now.
Targeting has to, but I think everything else is stand. Anyway, that might be an NFL rule. I think it's something new. Credit to Lawal as well for, like, picking it up. Like, he was on it as well. He was absolutely ready to pick the ball up and run it back, and let's sell this thing. That, and then since we're kind of in the middle of offense defense, the punt return that got called a fumble, abysmal call.
Solve for the equilibrium. If you can push a guy into a guy and push him to the punt returner, why would I ever not do that? Right. And not to mention, looking back, the knee tapped. It doesn't even matter that he got pushed in and created the fumble. The guy tapped Darius Davis's knee, which I understand is something you do and you don't get called for or whatever.
For sure.
But, like, he instigated contact and then they reviewed it, but they didn't review that. They reviewed whether Noah Daniels touched the ball, which, Noah Daniels, what are you doing, dude? Why don't you just fall on it and down it?
And
so that was a mistake, and TC made mistakes there, but that was absolutely, Grant, that was akin to last year against Texas when TCU had 10 men on the field for a punt and they called a timeout, and then during the timeout the referees reviewed and they threw out Foster for targeting. We were like, what in the heck? Like, I just didn't understand the train of logic that gets you to this point. And that was what was really the problem with it was, TCU made a mistake, but they shouldn't be penalized for a mistake in that fashion.
Yeah, it was just an abysmal call. I just wanted that on the record to lodge my complaint. I said I was going to write a strongly lettered word to the Big 12 offices. I'm sharpening my pen as we speak.
They listen to this podcast. It's fine. And Grant, we can put the rest of the conspiracy that I've seen from some prominent people about how TCU gets all the calls because the Big 12 wants TCU to win, which is news to me, but I think we have some clear evidence now for the Cougs that it's not true.
Buddy, I wish TCU got all the calls and the Big 12.
I would pay someone. I would write a check to a referee's house. If there was a mechanism to do this, I'd be all about.
Can I tell you, I think to pivot a bit more to defense, and then I want you to give me some advanced stats if you have them. I think the spill and kill is kind of working and kind of not. If you look at the top tacklers of TCU, Jamoy Hodge had 10, Johnny Hodges had 6, Josh Foster had 6, Mark Perry had 6, Abe Kamara and Bud Clark had 4. So those are your inside linebackers, your strong safeties, and a couple of those nickel corners that are making those tackles. That's what the defense is designed to do. They're just missing some of those tackles, and that's what creates a little bit of the frustration. But I do think the spill and kill is represented well in the tackle count from this game.
Dom Williams is spilling. Absolutely.
Which doing a great, I do not.
Tymon Mitchell.
What?
Yeah. No. I mean, they're doing a great job of, like, blocking up the A and B gaps. People aren't gashing TCU in the interior line. What they're doing is taking advantage of the spread or whatever. And I talked about at halftime, I wanted to see them kind of spread out and get to the edge a little more. I think that this is, again, Graham Harrell. It's a very logical reaction to a defense that wants to fill the gaps and get you outside to say, we're just going to beat you outside. And it took TCU a little bit of time to adjust to that. I mean, every West Virginia big play was a missed tackle. It was like the Kansas game where you're like, dude,
yeah.
I mean, I understand that like playing, like tackling is part of the game, but like in the second half, especially of that Kansas game, it wasn't so much that Lance Leipold out-schemed TCU as it was that there was a lot of missed tackles missed. And the West Virginia game, I think it was a little smarter the way they just said, hey, we're going to attack the edges a lot more and kind of beat you to the outside. But yes, TCU's missed tackle problem really makes that problematic. And there are redundancies, but we're also like missing multiple tackles on guys are there. We're just missing some tackles.
Yeah. It is very frustrating. Also in pass coverage, I mean, you look at, let's see.
While you're looking, Johnny Hodges pass breakup. Johnny Hodges pass breakup. Pass breakup. He reached his hand up and he got the hand of the ball and knocked it down. I don't even think he expected it. It was beautiful. I loved it.
It was amazing. Just pulling up, like let's say the top six targeted TCU defenders. Abe Kamara targeted 7 times, gave up 4 catches. Bud Clark was targeted 5 times, gave up 4. Trey was targeted 6, gave up 4. Hodges and Mark Perry both targeted 4 and gave up 3. Josh Newton targeted 4 times, gave up 0 catches. So just a little look there. It's there's work to be done, but it's not a performance that's going to lose you a game, I would say, especially this offense.
I think that, yeah, with this offense, you got a long leash. We've talked about that all year. The one thing that stood out to me about receiving was there was a long of 36 and 35. Sam James and Bryce Ford Wheaton both had that. Bryce Ford Wheaton's was downfield. Sam James was, there was probably a hold there, but whatever, it's fine. That happens. There's holding on every play. But Grant, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then Garrett Green had a 9-yard run. So 7 guys had a reception of 10 or more yards. 8 if you count Garrett Green's 9 yards there. The multiplicity of the explosive play, TCU put a cap on the explosive play. They didn't give up that big, big, big play touchdown. But, man, they gave up some chunk yards. And a lot of that is, especially the first half, hey, we're thinking about funneling you to the outside. Well, we're beat to the outside. Oh, there's nobody behind me, and I don't make the tackle, and I can't. Yeah. So definitely can see kind of the effects of some of that scheme in the first half, but they really did tighten it up in the second half.
I still think safety help over the top in the pass game is the most needed aspect for the TCU defense because – corners one-on-one, Trey and Keon Stewart are not the biggest guys. Same with Josh Newton. So getting that extra safety help is crucial, and I don't think the safeties are as capable in the passing game as you would like. But that's fine. That's a trade-off that you take for their help and run support. So
totally, totally agree. I also think that this was a game kind of like last year. Again, I won't blast a certain player. He's not playing right now. When he was in the game, TCU gave up most of their big runs.
Yeah. Yep.
And Keon Stewart got burned twice. And the second one he got targeted on, it was a 35-yard run, like just a huge play that Keon Stewart gave up. Bud Clark, a little bit of an issue with getting, you know, like I said that with Mason, like he got inside his head a little bit, but he came out victorious and that's all that matters. He won that matchup. But Keon Stewart was like, okay, THT's a little banked up. He's not on the field. Oh, they went after the backup quarterback. I mean, there are worse defense, there are worse offensive game plans than find the backup quarterback and throw it to your best receiver against him. Like, yeah. And West Virginia was able to manufacture that once. It was a big play. So that goes, you know, a lot of that kind of stuff happened where you're like, weird. Why is that guy getting the ball? Oh, we hear on the sideline, somebody's hurt and they're coming back in. Same thing with like that Kendre drive where it was like, why isn't Kendre getting the ball? And they say afterward, well, he can't really close his hand. He's worrying about ball security. And we were basically sticking his hand in a bucket of ice until he couldn't feel it so we could get him back out there.
Yeah. Which again, you said it earlier, credit to Kendre for just stepping up and toting the rock. Parker, is there anything else about this game? I have one other thing, and then we'll do a quick whip around, if that's okay with you. Shout out Griffin Kell. I think we've said it before, but dude, it has been nails. A 30-yarder and a 46-yarder in the fourth quarter to kind of ice this game. Very nice having him. This is the best he's kicked. I was not aware he was this good going into the season, but he has shown. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Very, very useful to have that weapon to bail us out when, you know, a drive goes wrong. We say, hey, we can reliably make a field goal if we get sacked, and that's going to be okay. That's going to, you know, raise the floor. Not just to point out the obvious, but like if TCU doesn't get a, am I wrong about that? Did they not get a field goal in the first play? They punted because they got sacked.
Yeah, so yeah, they punted.
That's what it was. 35 yards for a touchback. Golly. Okay, I'll do a little rant here. One, Griffin Kell's great. The problem is not that TCU didn't go for it on 4th and 18 at the West Virginia 35. The problem is that TCU on second down got sacked for 12 yards because somebody didn't pull and somebody didn't chip the guy coming off the line. The problem is that on 3rd and 18, TCU tried to get all 20 and threw it to Blake Noel instead of trying to play for two downs there. That's what's really the problem for me there.
No, I think that's fair. But also, like, I think there's also enough faith in the offense to where it's like, hey, okay, we're moving the hell out of the ball. We will score more touchdowns. I still think, like you said, they should have tried to get just a little bit of yardage and kick the field goal. But I think that's more having faith in your offense than anything else. Yeah, and maybe some mistrusted faith in your defense. But can I one more thing, Parker? I'm sorry. I had this note in my head when I was watching the game, but if you'll allow me to read just a couple of things, these are the lengths of scoring drives for both teams. I'll give it in time. West Virginia, 438, 440, 525, 204, 459, TCU 135, 305, 8 seconds, minute 11, 236, 707, 233. West Virginia had the ball for a very long time. And I think the defense kind of got wound down. I don't know if you have third down stats or not, but that was certainly a factor, is that they just kept extending drives and making the defense work.
West Virginia was 11 for 17 on third downs. That's 64%. That's including the fourth down conversion as well.
Yeah.
17 fourth third downs is a whole lot of plays. And early on, West Virginia just wasn't getting into third down at all. I think there is something, especially with TC's depth problem, about like these extreme disparities in time and like, that, you know, the fumble, and they had to be back out there immediately in the second half as well. I think that's definitely definitely a problem. That field goal drive, I wish they'd have scored there, but TCU started their own 4 and went a 7-minute drive. That was beefy. Yep. That was a beefy drive.
Oh, it was tough. It was a very tough run. And then they gave it to Quentin Johnston twice on a run play. Parker, is there anything
him catching
else
that fumble off the ground was pretty dope.
Yeah.
He dropped it and picked it up. I don't know.
We haven't talked about that. That was wild.
That felt like the game that ruins that. That felt like the play that ruins seasons. That felt like the oh no moment. And I'm glad he picked it up. He's a freak athlete. That was very fun.
It was very fun. Is there anything else before we go to the whip around?
Oh, if you let me linger here, I'll come up with something else. But I think we can go to the whip around. I think we've talked about it pretty sufficiently.
Okay. Let's go, and we will start with, as I close out the golf results, with the Big 12, Oklahoma 27, Iowa State 13. Is Matt Campbell going to get a call from Nebraska at this rate?
Well, this year he's got the thing of like, hey, you know, we're down because we don't have, you know, I lost a lot of guys, got a new quarterback. So in terms of coach speak, I think people like that. I'll just point out, yet again, Iowa State got burned on a special teams play. Oklahoma scored one of the coolest fake field goals that I think you'll ever see. And Iowa State was just unprepared to even consider the possibility. So I don't know. That just sticks in my mind because Matt Campbell has very recently talked about their special team success, which is just an objective falsity.
They've had a lot of success in special teams, Parker. I don't know if you're aware.
Matt Campbell's been so successful on special teams that he is tired of special teams.
He's gotten tired of winning. Kansas State 48, Oklahoma State 0. What in the smoking hell happened in this
game? Look, some teams survive the Will Howard's first half tornado, and some teams don't.
Kansas State was up 35-0 at the half. Will Howard had 21 of 37 for 296 yards and 4 touchdowns. I did not see that coming, but that kind of helps TCU, I think, if you're looking for an angle. A very good Kansas State team. So, damn.
Let's see.
Baylor 45, Texas Tech 17. Texas Tech played 3 quarterbacks in this game, and all 3 of them threw at least 1 interception.
Dude, they did Tyler Shuck so dirty. Joey McGuire, this was such a mistake to do this. They literally sat him, and they alternated between Smith and Morton. Both who are athletic, neither of whom are going to make good decisions. That's just who they are. And they brought him in first and 10, You're down 38-17 and you're at your own nine. And they made Tyler Shuck run his ass out there. And the first pick that he throws is all the way across the field, across his body, and Baylor intercepts it. Dude, that is malpractice. That is terrible.
It's not very nice. We can go national for a minute. Ohio State 44, Penn State 31. Sounds about right. I didn't think Penn State would score that many points. Ohio State had had a couple of really weird turnovers, but Ohio State covered because they're Ohio State. So
no, well, they didn't cover 15-5, which is what I got on the freaking show. No, 17-5 because they gave up that last damn touchdown and put me out of it. So I know a lot of people had 13 and I still made money on it. That's fine. But I had a couple beats yesterday that were very annoying. This was one of them.
What was the other beat?
Michigan by 0.5. I didn't get them.
Yeah,
they should have covered. And then USC, Michigan had the ball and couldn't kick a freaking field goal on that last drive. And then USC gave up one more touchdown, just couldn't get one more defensive stop against Arizona. They just quit playing. And so I got burned on that.
Arizona scored with a minute and 26 left. To pull
all three beat. Big dogs. It's fine. Like that was my fault. Whatever. It's fine. I stand by this.
Louisville 48, number 10, Wake Forest 21. Parker, Wake Forest, I believe, and unless I have that correct, eight turnovers in this game. Four picks, four fumbles lost. Woof.
I just have to read the drive chart in the second half. Wake Forest. So it's 14-13 Wake going into halftime. Right?
Okay.
Wake Forest has the ball. Interception, touchdown. Fumble, fumble, interception, fumble. Punt, interception, touchdown, fumble, interception, and then a touchdown. That is their second half. What?
Is that 30
minutes? What the heck happened? What did they eat at halftime? That's absurd. Absolutely absurd.
Oh, real quick, I have two more. Notre Dame 41, Syracuse 24. The Syracuse roller coaster has been fun. It is now over. It's fine. They're fine. Who cares? I lied. I have two more after this. Tennessee 44, Kentucky 6. Tennessee's really good. Kentucky is not. And I wanted to close on this. Ole Miss 31, Texas A&M 28. Texas A&M now cannot even reach 8-4. They're 3-5. They're paying Jimbo at this rate an average of $3.3 million per win.
I am in the wrong line of work.
I should have developed a 10-play playbook and then had Jameis Winston. I should have thought that through. Parker, is there anything else you'd like to talk about? Any other games that caught your fancy?
No, man, that was it. It feels like that's kind of the slate that I watched. What a fun weekend of games. I actually took the afternoon off a minute to go to Lowe's and build up a fire pit because it's perfect weather for it. So I didn't catch. I just caught the second half of that Louisville game from the TV across the lawn. I put it on my back porch and just absolutely absurd. But yeah, fun week of games. And Grant, TCU's undefeated, man. And I think we could talk about, like, are they good? Would they beat an SEC team? Whatever, that's fine. But we can also just sit here and say, in the past, I think right now, TCU is a 6-2 kind of team, given the way that they've played and the teams that they've played. And the fact is, in the past, in the very recent past, that 6-2 team would have self-inflicted wounds to be a 4-4 team. And instead, they have squeezed the very last bit of marrow out of this to be an 8-0 team. That makes me feel good. I'm worried long-term about whether Sonny Dykes can build this roster again. I think that's a fair criticism, not criticism, but just say like, hey, I just need to see that he can build a Power Five roster. But when he has a Power Five roster that's good and experienced, he can very clearly optimize that roster.
Eternity begins anew each day for the TCU Horned Frogs. Parker, this has been the Purple Theory Podcast. My name is Grant McGalliard. You can find me on Twitter at Grant McGalliard, spelled like it sounds with all those vowels. He's Parker Fleming. He's at Stats of War. He's on the BetUS show, which is Tuesday and Wednesday, if I'm correct.
Tuesday, Wednesday, noon central.
Tuesday, Wednesday, noon central. TCU's 8-0 and ranked number 7th in the country. That's good enough for me. Parker, go Frogs.
Go Frogs.